Well, there are a lot of fun recreational activities that you can take part in throughout the year in Wisconsin, and our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources exists to make sure people enjoy outdoor activities while being safe. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today with our two guests, Katrina Noyan, a safety specialist warden at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Katrina, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
As well, Kyle Drake, a guest recreational safety warden at the Wisconsin DNR. And Kyle, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it very much. They're going to be talking about some of the most common accidents for people taking part in outdoor activities, give some tips on how you can ensure your safety. Maybe you have a favorite outdoor activity. Talk about that with us if you want. I hope you'll join in with your experiences to share as well. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And just, my own personal story, I have a friend that I've known my whole life, and I hunted and fished with him in particular for probably 30 years, and he was on a fishing trip, kind of a guy that doesn't drink and doesn't, but spends a ton of time, more than anybody I've ever known, on the water, and he was fishing in the fall with another guy and fell out of the boat and drowned. He didn't have his personal flotation device on, and it was a windy day in the fall, Katrina, and his friend threw a something out for him to grab onto, a thrower, but he was about a foot short, and terrible thing to have happen.
It is, and it's one of the things that we try to stress with everybody. It's not enough just to have life jackets on board, because if something happens just like that, you fall out. Maybe you hit your head, you're in a very quick occurring accident, you're not going to be able to put on your life jacket. So that's one of the things that we really stress to people. It's great to have them on board, but it's more important to actually be wearing it.
Maybe you can talk about your roles, and Kyle, you could start out with and talk about your role with the DNR, what the department does in this area.
Right. Our current position is called Recreation Safety Warden, and what we do, Katrina and I and a few others around the state, is we work with our volunteer instructors in the safety education program, teaching hunter education, snowmobile education, ATV, and boating education. So our job is mostly in the enforcement and education safety section. We recruit volunteer instructors, train them, and then they go out and teach the courses.
So keeps you busy then?
Keeps me busy, yeah. We have... I'm not sure the exact number, thousands and thousands of volunteer instructors around the state that teach the four disciplines, and there's many, many, many hours that go into the process.
How many accidents, fatal accidents, for example, might happen in the course of a year, Katrina?
Well, this year so far for boating fatalities, we have approximately 15 right now. Last year for 2015, I think there was approximately 21 total. So we're at 15 already for this year. One of the things we discuss and point out is people usually are surprised by this, but 9 of those fatalities this year have been people who were out in a canoe or a kayak.
Oh.
The majority of them have drowned. And again, it goes back to life jackets and wearing them.
I couldn't imagine being in my kayak without a life jacket on. I'm not the greatest kayaker in the world anyway. And it happens in an instant, doesn't it?
It does. It happens very quickly. So you got to have it on, because you're just not going to have time to put it on when you need it.
Well, let's talk about that, the safety certification, those education classes. Are they offered at different times, or when is it? When are they offered?
Depending on the discipline, for the boating safety course, there's two ways to be certified. Anyone born on or after January 1st, 1989, to operate a boat in Wisconsin, a motorboat in Wisconsin, has to take a safety course. And the two methods are, there are some online courses that are strictly online. You can get on a computer, take it between 3 and 5 hours, go through the safety course online and get certified. Otherwise, there are some classrooms where you actually go in and instructor-taught classroom sessions.
I remember, and this is not boating, but I went through the hunter safety education program with my daughter, who's 12, and it was quite a nice experience, actually. I learned some things, too, even though I've been out there for a long, long time and wound up, I thought, I'll finish it, too. So I took the test, too, and passed the test, as did she, with 100% accuracy on my
very well done
on my test. So I was kind of pleased with that. What normally and what's covered in, let's say, the boating? What are we doing?
Starts out just basic type of boats and goes all the way through on safety equipment, rules of operation, rights of ways, buoys, markers, navigation aids, just anything you really need to know to operate a motorboat in Wisconsin, be safe about it. Like Katrina says, one thing we are working on is the paddle sports. A lot of these current boating safety course concentrates on motorboats, but again, 9 out of the 15 incidents this year have been paddle sports. And so we're working together, Katrina and a few of our recreation safety wardens are working on a paddle sport kind of committee, trying to get that up to speed.
Well, living on having lived on Lake Monona, I can, one more story from my point of view. I was watched a family of three boys and a father, I take it, were out in their canoe, and they were on Lake Monona, and there are a lot of boats out there. And I was going to leave, and I just went back to check once more, and I see the canoe was overturned. So wife and I jumped in our boat and raced out there. The kids all had PFTs on, but the father didn't, and he was down, so I had to go down and get him. And we got him up, and he was fine. But, it didn't appear to me that family had really had much in the way of experience with a canoe. And they were, and I don't think the father didn't want to have that kind of experience. But you need to have a little care and a little practice before you do something.
Yeah, definitely. It's important to be experienced, or at least, get as much training as you can, because you really need to know how to self-rescue or be able to self-rescue somebody else, especially with canoes or kayaks. There's ways, if you're out farther out and you got to get back into your canoe or kayak, or you have to empty it if it's full of water, you really need to be prepared for those things so you know how to do it, because there's places that you'll go and you can't get to shore. Some people think, well, if it tips, I'm just going to drag it to shore and empty it there and get back in. But, we have a lot of canoeing and kayaking in places where you got to be able to get back in it yourself. You have to be concerned with wind and weather. And, if you're canoeing or kayaking in colder weather, you got to think about hypothermia. And so there's a lot of things to think about when you're going to canoe or kayak. I think we forget about that, because it's such a fun activity.
And I'm thinking, just to be a little centrist here, the paddle and portage is this weekend. I think it's Saturday in Madison. And so there'll be, I don't know how many, hundreds and hundreds of people out there with their canoes and their kayaks. An event like that, do you guys take part in anything like that?
Yeah, oftentimes we'll have either ourselves or the field wardens, the guys, conservation wardens, will be out there monitoring what's going on. And you're correct, it's just amazing. You look at lakes, on a Saturday afternoon now, what type of boating activity is going on now versus 10 years ago. And before it was all, motorboats. And now there's so many paddle sports, canoes, kayaks, stand-up paddle boards. It's amazing.
Yeah, my own view on it was I didn't spend a lot of time on the weekend on the lakes. And typically it's at least in the southern area of the state, it's a lot easier, I think, to go out during the week when there isn't so much traffic.
Oh, most definitely. Our weekends are busy. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, that's for sure. Katrina Nguyen and Kyle Drake from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources are guests today as we talk outdoor safety with them. Maybe you've got an experience to share or maybe a question. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. The other, I also wanted to mention ATV and UTV riding as well. I assume those are things that you worry about and work on as well.
Yeah, correct. Our four main disciplines are the boats, ATVs, UTVs, snowmobiles, and then hunter education. So, yes, we deal with ATV, UTV operation as well.
And those accidents can be difficult and often serious injuries or death associated with those.
Oh, most definitely. They are recreational vehicles. You know, nowadays they're built up to 1,000-plus cc's. They can go 80 miles an hour, and there's very little protection. You don't have a seat belt. You don't have roll bars. You don't have airbags. Sometimes you have a helmet, and that's about it.
Yeah. We've had 11 fatalities on ATVs, UTVs this year already.
11?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, we... I did have a friend who lost her son several years back now on flipped over on the kid's ATV, and that was it for him. And it was a very, those are sad, very terrible circumstances. What's like most common cause? Is it speed? Is it what?
Speed has a major factor in it. Just being unfamiliar with the machines, as you just mentioned, they tip readily. The center of gravity is different than anything else you'll operate out there, and so they will tip over. And its difference between ATVs and UTVs is amazing, too. If you operate ATVs all your life and you jump in a UTV, you think you can handle it, but the UTV handles completely different. That and the other thing that's coming up is, I think, 8 out of the 11 happen on roadways. A lot of our municipalities, counties are opening up roadways to ATV and UTV use. They just have to be careful because those machines are not meant to be operated at high rate of speed. They're not meant, those tires are not meant to go on pavement.
Well, Bill in Milwaukee has something. Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm having a problem getting adults to wear PFDs on board the boat. I get less resistance from kids up to like 16 or so forth, but the adults come up with all sorts of reasons, or they just refuse. And one big problem is if I have to go forward and dodge around the rigging, I got to take mine off. Now, I use an inflatable offshore, but it still gets caught on the rigging, and then they say, well, if you don't need it, I don't need it either. So I wonder if you have some suggestions there.
Well, you know, I've heard that problem before, and it's a hard situation to navigate. You know, I know some boaters who say they just make it a rule on their boat and say anybody that comes on board is going to wear a life jacket, and they go from there. But you know, I don't have any real good answers unless Kyle has some real good answers on that.
You know what?
It's hard with adults.
Yeah, I tell you what, Bill, keep listening. We'll take that up again. We need to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back. They'll be with us till 12:30. Stay with us. Well, safety is important any time of the year. It's especially important, I think, and to be mindful when you're on the water or you're on your ATV or your UTV, taking time, having fun in the outdoors, and a lot of times I think that's a time when you can also let your guard down a little bit. And we're zeroing in a bit now on safety with our two guests, Katrina Nguyen, safety specialist, warden at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Kyle Drake, recreation safety warden with the DNR. Great to have them along, and lots of callers online. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Kyle, I want to go back to you because we had a caller earlier talking about, well, getting adults to put on a PFD when they're on the boat. And he was having troubles himself. Sometimes he'd have to take his off to do some turning. But maybe comment on that.
We hear a variety of reasons why people don't wear life jackets. They're too hot, they're too bulky, they get in the way. But there is such a variety of personal flotation devices, PFDs out there now. You know, anything from float coats to the inflatables to now they have the belt inflatables, which is basically a fanny pack, more or less. It goes around your waist, and when you need it, it inflates, and you actually put it over the top of your head. So something like that might be something that they could look at. It wears just like any other belt, and you forget it's there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Keith in Antigo has a comment for us. Keith, hi. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment and then a question. The comment may be of interest to you and your listeners. I have a summer home in northern Wisconsin. I'm from the state of Washington. And on our lake up there, there is a no-wake rule after 6 o'clock in the evening. And three times this summer, there have been people violating that rule. I've chased them down. These have been people in jet skis, and I've chased them down in my kayak all three times to inform them of this rule. And each time I have had the opportunity to talk with them, all three of these people have looked at me with wonderment in their eyes and have asked me, what is a wake? And so my question is there any legislation that requires a person in Wisconsin to have taken this boater safety course and to teach them the basic rudiments of lake safety, such as what a wake is?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for calling.
There's no real definition of what a wake is. What the definition is what is slow no wake. And slow and awake is as slow as you can possibly go in that motorboat and still maintain steerage speed or steerage. So as slow as you possibly can go and still steer that boat. So it's basically idle speed for most boats, especially, you know, personal watercraft. For a lot of them, it's a fairly slow speed. The only one that's a little bit more difficult is a stand-up PWC. They have to go a little bit faster to maintain steerage, but basically it's idle speed, as slow as you possibly can go, and still maintain steerage.
So slow, no wake, that's what it means.
It's, yep, slow as you can possibly go. And for most boats, it's slow.
It's slow,
yep.
Yeah.
Can I follow up with another question then?
Sure.
I mean, this seems like a fairly basic piece of information that these three people had no idea about. I recognize that there's no legal definition of a wake, but this is a fairly common boating term that these folks had absolutely no clue as to what it meant.
Yeah. So it's something that you certainly talk about, I assume, in the courses that you teach.
Oh, absolutely. What people get online from the DNR or look at online regulations from DNR are the state regulations. These ordinances that deal with speed at certain times of day, those are adopted by local municipalities or communities. So that's something you have to be aware of anytime you go out on a new lake. They should be posted at the boat landing. Stop. There's usually a big billboard. It's there for a reason. Stop and read the information that's on that billboard. It'll tell you the regulations.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks again, Keith, for calling. I appreciate bringing that up for us. I want to turn to Dave in Door County next. Dave, hello. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Larry. I want to bring up a couple of things about the kayaks. Living up in Door County, we're seeing a ton of kayakers and new people buying new kayaks, a lot of novices. A lot of cheap boats, for example. And we have a lot of law enforcement friends up here, and they just loathe the fact that the kayaks are very dangerous in such a way that if you get in a big water and you're over your head in the water, you fall out of that kayak or tip over, you can't get back in. And especially with the waves and the water around here and the coolness of the Lake Michigan, freezing to death, hypothermia, that kind of stuff, if you're away from shore, there's no way to get back into these boats. I had a relative that just got a new kayak, and I mentioned that to him, and he, pretty smart cookie, went out and tried to get back in his kayak and could not get back in, and proving my point or whatever that the law enforcement are telling me.
Yeah. Go ahead, Katrina.
Yeah, like Kyle mentioned earlier, the DNR is now looking. We formed a committee to start doing some more look into training that's necessary for people out there, because there's so many different kinds of kayaks. You can buy them anywhere. And so they're very a wide range of, you know, whether there's flotation in them, things like that. So anybody can buy a kayak, and, you know, you don't need any training. So we're really trying to just get the word out on how important it is to really look at what you're buying, understand, the things that are on the kayak that are important, flotation and things like that, instead of just, you know, maybe a basic kayak that has no flotation, things like that. And then to take some training, because you can, you know, they're easily transportable. You can go anywhere. And you really need to understand the different bodies of waters that you get on, and you need to practice. And like you said, it's very difficult to get back into kayaks if you haven't had the training and you haven't practiced it. it. So it's things that people don't think about, like you said, the hypothermia, the weather, getting back if you fall out. There's just a lot of stuff that goes into canoeing and kayaking that, you know, people tend to think, I'm just going to get in and I'm going to go and I'm not going to have any issues and I'm going to come back and it's going to be a great day. But we're really trying to spread the word on getting training, investing in good equipment, and knowing what you're doing.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks again, Dave, for calling. Let's turn to Dan in Racine next. Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how you doing today?
Great.
I'm with the Coast Guard, U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, and I'm a vessel examiner. And we're a volunteer group that works with the public on boater education and safety-related issues. In the last probably 5 years, we've been mandated to work with the paddle sport community. We also work with the DNR, and we also coordinate teaching professionals with that so we can get certified through the DNR to actually teach their course. We also teach a course to anybody in the public, and we're free of charge. So everything you're talking about today is great. And most of the people, you know, if you fall in the water, you're in a wet sport, you need to be wearing something. And if you're going to be in rivers with rapids, you need to be wearing a helmet. Because you can get yourself knocked unconscious. And most of these life vests that they put on for these raftings and canoes and kayaks are not type 1 or type 2. They're usually type 3 because they want the mobility in them. But they won't float you over if you become unconscious.
Yeah.
So the other thing we also do is we inspect the crafts. We issue a safety sticker called a VSC decal to each craft. We also offer, when available, an orange indelible ink write-on retroreflective orange sticker that can go on the outside of the canoe or kayak. For the main reason, if that you get lost, somebody starts to do search and rescue for you, and it's at night and they're scanning along the bank, when they hit that reflector, boy, it's like turning the sun on. And now at least they can find out where the canoe and who it belonged to help you try to figure out whether maybe they can try to help find the person. Well, so that's a free service we do. And right now I'm scheduled next week to do two facilities in Racine that rent canoes and kayaks. And so that's a big deal for me.
Yeah.
But we do that.
Well, I thank you very much for calling. And Kyle, you want to comment on that?
No, just thanks, Dan, for being involved in the auxiliary. All the members of auxiliary are the Power Squadron. They do an excellent service in making people be safe out there. And you mentioned the types of life jackets, PFDs, type 1s, type 2s, type 3s. It's just a variation in the amount of flotation in them and how they float. Like a type 1 is supposed to turn you up right side up and keep your head out of the water, versus a type 3 is just meant to keep you above water. So all good points, and again, appreciate the service that the Auxiliary yeah. Coast Guard does.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling in. Lots of callers online. I want to give some others a chance to join us. So let's turn to Mike in Madison next. Mike, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to share a crazy story. I'm 60-plus years old, and I spent a lot of time on the water, and I thought I've seen just about everything there is to see as far as crazy things. But I think it was last Thursday. We were paddling on the Wisconsin River, and two Cessna airplanes were coming downstream on the river. We were paddling upstream. And one of them was had a big spray of water. I mean, it was like right on the water surface.
Wow!
And we thought they were, ski planes, or and then we realized they didn't. They had regular round tires, and then the plane pulled up and flew off before it went into the Lone Rock Bridge crossing 130. Pretty amazing, huh?
Oh, wow! And that happened to me on Lake Mendota. Well, that was a float plane coming in to land, and about 10, 15 feet above my head as it went over. It was quite a shock to see something like that. Well, are there? Go ahead, and Kyle, you were going to.
Yeah, that's we have no jurisdiction over float planes or airplanes. That's FAA. So, but that flying that close over the Wisconsin River does not sound like that would be per FAA rules.
No, for sure.
and there is one I just saw a few weeks ago on Wabisa. One of those float planes landed and went off. So they are present everywhere.
Yeah, they sure are. Mike, thanks. That very interesting story. That would have that'd been a little scary to watch that, for sure. Well, Larry in Sturgeon Bay, I'm glad you're calling in. Thanks for visiting with us. And what's on your mind?
Well, thank you so much for taking my call, but I grew up here on the water in Sturgeon Bay all my life, and I think a big component a lot of people are missing is that when they recreate nowadays, and with this new everybody charging to get outdoors and enjoy something, you know, in a short amount of time they have to recreate, they forget that this isn't volleyball and softball, and that these sports, you know, can be life and death, whether we're talking hunting or fishing or just this kayaking craze I see in Sturgeon Bay, car after car after car, some of them with the price tag still on them. And if you grew up here, you know, out in Lake Michigan, you don't have a lot of time if you end up in that water and you're in a bad way. So I just hope that more and more people get the idea that, you know, there is a inherent danger with some of our outdoor recreation. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Comment from either of you? You're agreeing.
Yeah, just, you know, just reiterating, you know, the same thing that we've talked about, just that it's really, there's just so many canoe and kayakers out there. It's such a great activity, but we just want everybody to be safe. And, you know, if you're listening to us today, just really think about if you haven't had any training, go out there and get some training.
And that's, you know, what we do is the information that our instructors teach, our volunteers instructor, we teach is life and death material. And it's that simple.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob and Eau Claire, thanks a lot for calling.
Yes, you're welcome. Good afternoon. As I'm listening, I'm hearing you stressing the number of fatalities, which is important. You mentioned, I think, 11 ATV fatalities so far this year. But I think it's also important to stress the number of injuries that happen with these sorts of sports, which I'm guessing is easily in the hundreds. And, you know, injuries, there are those that you can recover from, such as a broken bone, a cut, maybe a bad bruise, to those that are life-altering, such as amputations, brain injuries, maybe blinded in an eye. And I think to stress that to listeners, because when you hear 11 fatalities, you think, well, your chances are still pretty good that nothing's going to happen to you. But when you hear about the number of injuries that occur, that might have a bigger impact. And so I guess my question is, do you also keep statistics on injuries that happen?
Okay, Katrina, you want to go to you?
You know, for boating, the requirement for operators to do to put in, if they're in an accident, to submit a accident report form. So we do keep for boating statistics. I mean, I can look back on some of the statistics for 2015, and there were, last year I talked about 21 fatalities, but there were a total of, I believe, approximately 115 accidents with 59 injuries that were reported. As far as ATVs, maybe you want to talk about that, Kyle, as far as injuries that we don't keep track of.
Well, you're exactly right. There's hundreds of injuries, more than there are fatalities. Part of the problem is the reporting system. It's not all that great, because things happen that the department doesn't hear about, the sheriff department might investigate or a police department might investigate, that we don't hear about, or that happen on private lands and show up at the hospital and no one ever knows those ATV related. So part of the problem is again, the reporting is not up to, I guess, where it should be. But you're exactly correct. Some people, they think these are toys and are meant to go out there and have fun, and that's only part of it. They are meant to have fun, but they have a purpose, and they have a rules of operation that you need to follow. Some people don't realize that.
Yeah, so just to let people know that, yeah, you may not die from this, but you could have a life-altering injury, I think, is another important thing to stress.
Right.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely. Definitely. Well, I know another person whose husband was on a jet ski and was involved in, you know, fell off and wound up out of work for about 6 months. I think broke his hip or something like that. It was just a frightening, terrible accident. Well, he didn't die, but he was out of work for 6 months.
Mm-hmm. I think when you combine speed with any type of machinery, you're going to have accidents. One of the things, you know, we want people to think about is it takes a lot to operate these machines, to think about the things you have to think about to be safe. But then, you know, we also talk to people about, you know, drinking while they're operating a boat or an ATV. You know, we try to get people to understand how, you know, how they're putting themselves in danger, or if it's a boat, how the people in the boat are being put at danger if the operators are drinking. So that's another thing that we like to discuss with the general public, and it's in the safety education classes about how important it is not to drink and drive.
Yeah. Bob, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. You guys have what's called a float plan, or people should have a float plan. Tell about that.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about anytime you go out, you're going on a trip, you want to make sure that you're telling somebody where you're going, how long you're going to be gone, what time you're going to be back, because, you know, then you have somebody looking for you and waiting to hear from you when you get back, and when they don't, they can call somebody to get people out looking for you and get to you quicker to rescue you if needed be.
And that's one of the big things we are pushing with the PAL sports is go with somebody. Don't go by yourself. Go with somebody so you have somebody there to help you in case you overturn or have, you know, there's rescues that we have been taught or are teaching that involve two boats and things of that nature. So take somebody with you as well.
Yeah, it's surprising how often I see somebody out in a kayak all by himself or herself, or in a more kayaks than canoes for some reason, but I kind of always shudder a little bit when I, you know, you're all alone out on the water. You better know what you're doing out there, and you better try and be safe. I think what's the most forgotten safety concern people should pay more attention to when it comes to recreational activities? Is there one? I know, yeah. Katrina, you mentioned alcohol, and that's certainly one. But Kyle?
Again, just that these are pieces of equipment. They are tools, and like any other tool, you can hurt yourself on them. Have training on them so you know how to operate that tool correctly.
And I think the training is that part of it is the least... probably the least followed. You buy a boat, motor, and trailer, and you learn from usually the company wherever you buy it from. They're very good about telling you how to get it started and all that part of it. But the boats I've purchased, and I purchased quite a few over the years, I at least motor boats, I don't recall any safety materials or people talking about safety very much. Mm-hmm. And that may be a place to be doing perhaps a little more work with those who sell those boats and kayaks and canoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have mandatory dates, like for hunter education. Anyone born on or after January 1st, 1973, in order to hunt in Wisconsin, has to take hunter education. For snowmobile, it's on or after January 1st, 1985. You have to take snowmobile safety. ATV, it's 1988, and then boating, 1989. So eventually, as things go along, anyone who's operating those types of equipment will have to have the safety training in order to be legally operating.
And all our classes are online on the DNR website. It's dnr.wi.gov. You can go there and find any of the classes that are being offered now statewide and sign up.
Can you, I know for the hunting, just quickly, that you do have one, there's another step where you have to go, if you did it online, you would still have to go somewhere and demonstrate that you know how to handle the firearms, for example. Is there any, if you do an online one for boating, is there a requirement of that nature or not?
There is not. You can get your certification online with boating. With Hunter Ed, we have different ways to get certification. Adults can do an adult test out, but they have to come in and they mm-hmm. get tested out. We do have traditional courses, which are various hours, but they're a minimum of 10 hours and can be over several days. And there's also the online course, but there is a requirement that you come in for a whole field day day of training is what we call it, and there's specific instructors that teach that.
Yeah. Well, I had big thanks to the Hope Rod and Gun Club that that gave the Hunter Safety Program. They do a marvelous job there, and I know there are great groups all over the state doing that. I want to thank you guys for being with us. I hope we can come back and talk about safety on not only boating but and ATVing, but other things as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate very much having Katrina Noyan, a safety specialist with the DNR, Kyle Drake, Recreation Safety Warden. They're both wardens with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Great to have them along. And thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow we'll talk car maintenance, so I hope you'll join us for that. Here on the Ideas Network, we got lots more in store. Stay with us.